While sex in marriage is one of the great gifts that God gives to a couple, and one of the most enjoyable parts of marriage for many, it can also be an area where couples face some of the strongest challenges and even disagreements. I'm John Fuller, along with Greg and Aaron Smalley, who lead the Focus Marriage team. And Greg, there are stats out there, statistics about how common it is for couples to fight about sexuality. And I'm guessing the numbers are pretty significant.
Yeah, absolutely. I know roughly about 43% of women and 31% of men experience some level of sexual dysfunction. So that's going to lead to a lot of frustration, probably to a lot of difficult conversations, arguments. In our country, about 15 to 20% of married couples are sexless. So they're hardly ever having sex. So again, you can imagine just the breeding ground for arguments. Even on our assessment that we talk about all the time,
Focus Marriage Assessment,
that sex is the number two thing that people most struggle with. So it's kind of that growth area, the second biggest growth area that we find. So a lot of couples are dealing with this. Sadly, most couples aren't talking about it, which leads to further, disconnection. And so it's certainly statistically a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go ahead and hear now from Shanti Feldhahn and Dr. Michael Seitzma as they spoke with Jim Daly and me about sexuality in marriage. And specifically, they addressed the situation in which one spouse has a stronger desire sexually than the other.
What if consistently you're looking at the mirror hoping, and either there's nothing there, or it's one.
And that's a conversation—
for the fifth week in a row.
That's a conversation for the couple to have. And what I find most common in my office is that she, because we've identified her as a lower desire, she's saying, I don't have the initiating type of desire. And she is even misreading herself, that helping to shift it to where she can say, could I be receptive tonight? And what's happening is he's coming in and he is trying to initiate, and she is not immediately responding to it. He's getting all hurt and bent out of shape and then not acting very attractive.
Right.
And sometimes the wives say, it takes me a few minutes to sort through this. And then I look up and I think, yeah, I could do it, but not with you, not with how you're acting right now. Right. And if he can stay calm, and she says, well, maybe it's okay. Now, how do I draw her in? How do I recognize that she's going to be receptive? She's willing to be receptive. And I'm going to step up my game and I'm going to draw her into this and her being willing to. And it's the same with husbands who are receptive and the wives who are more initiating, that she steps up and, wait, I thought guys were always supposed to be this way and you're not. But if she can get even some receptivity, but he has to acknowledge that is a legitimate type of desire, mm-hmm. and I may need to choose to move forward. And a couple minutes into it, the desire kicks in.
Can I raise something that I think will help a lot of women, especially if they're the one with receptive desire? And for the men, and it's 38% of men have receptive desire, often older men as they get older. But one of the things, as I was learning this stuff and we were going through the research, I would be talking to my girlfriends.
Yeah, you know, that's like, good research.
They'd be like, what are you finding?
Yeah.
And one of the things that I explained to them has really, like, transformational is taking this initiating receptive thing that Dr. Mike was talking about and explaining really pointedly that what this means is that desire is occurring in the reverse order.
Uh-huh.
And so she, because she's not necessarily, and again, this is the stereotypical, but the person with receptive desire, because they're not feeling that surge of desire and they're having to make a decision to get engaged with their spouse in that way, knowing that they'll start feeling it, a few minutes in, they're making that decision based on how they feel about you and the relationship the rest of the day.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's a key point for a lot of spouses to recognize, is that she is having, and again, I keep saying the stereotypical, but the person with receptive desire is having to make a decision based on how the relationship has been crafted, how you guys have been talking, whether there has been, pouting or whether there has been a lot of, good connection in other ways, and then recognizing, okay, I'm going to I'm going to make a decision. And as we get into this, then my body starts feeling what maybe you felt from the very beginning. Yeah.
No, that's good. That's really important. And it's a healthy way to do it. I think one question we need to ask, I just can sense somebody screaming, saying, where's God in all this? I mean, what is God designed this to be? And why does it seem so dysfunctional for me? Because it should be a good thing. This is a gift. This is a wedding present.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite questions, to wrestle with the integration of it and how it fits in. And I like to point to Christ standing in the book of Revelation, and he's just identified himself as the groom. And he says that he looks at his bride, and he is always invitational with her. He's always inviting her in. And he asked the bride to be receptive to it. He says, behold, I stand at the door and I knock. Not I'm pounding on the door. Not I'm trying to bust the door down. Not I'm demeaning because you're not opening the door. I'm not threatening to go to the next door neighbor. I'm just standing here saying I'm open. And the invitation for spouses is be open, be invitational. And then he says, if anyone will hear my voice and open the door, I will come in and we will have, in his language, there is a sensual feast together. We will enjoy that time. And I think God puts both of those often into the same marital relationship, where one tends to be more receptive and the other more initiating. Mm-hmm. And as long as they accept influence from each other, as long as they allow that yours works a little different than mine, I'm going to become a student of you. I'm going to be curious and figure out how. Then it can work really well.
Wow, some really deep stuff from Michael and from Shanti. Aaron, let me turn to you and just ask about the nature of the request, if I can. So in a relationship, if one of the spouses is not demanding but saying, hey, I need this, can we talk about this? What does that do in the relationship?
It's so important that couples are talking about sex. And specifically, if one does have a higher sex drive than the other, navigating that carefully, because so often we'll internalize a negative message about they're not attracted to me, they don't desire me, whatever it is that's happening, couples have to talk about it. And as they gently talk about this or gently request intimacy or sex in the marriage, that it creates a safety within the relationship, an emotional safety that we can talk about this, and that this relationship is one that we can work through things, and there's room for both of us in the relationship. Mm-hmm. There's respect for one another and consideration about we're different, and that's okay, but how do we make this work in a way that feels good to you and to me?
And that's so important. Because certainly the goal is to help couples enjoy that amazing gift that God's given within a marriage called sex. I mean, that's the end in mind, is for them to enjoy that. But I tell you what, how they manage just that entire relationship, how they talk through that, how gentle they are, how they create that safety that Aaron was talking about, honestly, that is going to have a greater impact on their relationship. How they talk through, how they care for each other in leading up to the act of sex is going to be more beneficial to the relationship than the act itself. Mm. And so we can't ever forget about the importance of, how we talk through this and how we care for each other as we negotiate through desires and all that is such a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sexuality is also a major component of our free online marriage assessment.
It is.
We want you to take this assessment if you haven't lately, because it addresses money and communication and sexuality, among other things, and it's free. The output of your time invested, 15 or 20 minutes, is going to be hours of conversation with your spouse about where you are and how you grow, and just kind of using a phrase that Greg mentioned earlier, level setting the discussion about sexuality in the relationship. Find that free online marriage assessment. The link is in the show notes. And while you're at the website, make a donation to the Ministry of Focus on the Family, please. We are a listener-supported ministry, and we can't produce podcasts like this and then offer so many different marriage-strengthening resources without your partnership. So donate today, either a monthly pledge or a one-time gift, And we'll send a copy of the book from Shanti and Dr. Michael called Secrets of Sex and Marriage, 8 Surprises That Make All the Difference. You'll find all the details about donating and getting the book in the show notes. We'll hear more from Shanti and Michael next time. And for now, on behalf of Greg and Aaron Smalley and the entire team, I'm John Fuller, and thanks for listening to the Focus on the Family Marriage Podcast.
Hi, I'm Dr. Greg Smalley.
And I'm Aaron Smalley.
Marriage is an amazing gift from God, but it can also be a challenge sometimes.
That's right. We could all use a little guidance.
And that's why we started our podcast, Crazy Little Thing Called Marriage.
We talk about things like recognizing conflict cycles, dealing with stress, and how to grow your love each day.
Listen at crazylittlethingcalledmarriage.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
We can't wait to see you there.